Alright guys, welcome to episode 4 of the Ginger Veteran Podcast, Neuroplasticity. I'm your host, Fred Gregory. Hope you guys enjoyed the shortened intro. Actually got a lot of feedback on it that it was too long and everybody wanted to hurry up and get to the story. So I'm excited to make this change and I hope everybody enjoys it. So real quick, a request that I read on Facebook was, somebody would like to know exactly how my mental health affected my military service. So I'm going to go into a little detail about that and also how it affected my career since. So, you know, thinking about my military service, it's actually kind of hard to really pinpoint anything, that was affected. You know, I did have struggled, you know, since I turned 18 with my weight. That's always been a struggle for me. And it wasn't necessarily how much food I ate, but it was what I was eating, and it was just putting a lot of weight on me. I still struggle with my weight now. My first year in the military, I really, really had a struggle with my weight. I had a struggle with taking PT tests and, took me a couple of tries to pass one, I would say. Thankfully, you know, something happened and the records didn't get kept properly, and I was able to turn myself around and actually, you know, make a change there. And I did it with diet and exercise on my own. You know, I went on gate guard and I decided, you know, hey, this is really what I want to do, right? I want to be in the military. I want to be a soldier. I want to serve my country. So I know what I have to do to be able to pass these tests and be able to pass, you know, basic height and weight, right? And this is really what I wanted to do. So I was really driven. So I changed my diet around. I'm eating spinach, eating chicken, you know, eating healthy, and I'm going to the gym. I'm running. I'm also going to the pool when I have the opportunity, and I'm getting in really good shape. And, I come back off gate guard and I take a PT test and pass it. I was doing really good doing PT, and I mean, I'd gotten in really good shape, and it was great. It was awesome. So I would say that, you know, prior to that, I think that definitely affected my career. If you can't pass PT tests, you can't promote. If you fail so many, you're supposed to get kicked out. But if they don't keep the records properly, then, you know, hey, it helped me out. So that was great. Because I actually fell in love with the Army, fell in love with my service. And, I tried making a career out of it, and I really thoroughly enjoyed being a non-commissioned officer in the Army and leading soldiers and being there for soldiers and helping soldiers out. I really enjoyed that. So that's really, looking back, I mean, that's what I can pinpoint looking back, as something that may have been affected by my mental health. So the reason why I say it's really hard to pinpoint is because back when I was in the military, I didn't think anything was wrong. You know, I wasn't having these episodes that I've had after the military. I wasn't having PTSD episodes, which for me, it's like everything becomes a cartoon, and I come out of my body, and everything's like cartoonish, and I'm not where I actually am in reality. I'll have like a flashback to a certain thing that happened that I've kind of repressed and blocked out. But you know, that didn't happen while I was in the military. I didn't have episodes like that. I didn't experience those until after I got out. But I mean, you know, thinking back to my service, you know, there's probably a lot of things that could have been affected, early on, in a positive way, had I known something was wrong with me and had I been able to get help. you know, it there's a lot of different ways we can look at it, a lot of different angles that we can take. But maybe I would have advanced in my career a little bit faster had I had a better hold of my mental health. You know, you don't necessarily experience symptoms of what you have until something triggers it, right? So, you know, I've been diagnosed with PTSD from childhood trauma. I've been diagnosed with bipolar two. You know, kind of thinking back, and I mean, I might have to ask my wife, I'm not sure. But I don't really remember having a lot of mood swings when I was in the military. And that's something that, you know, was new after getting out. I don't remember, obviously, never had flashbacks. I don't remember any, you know, anger issues. I think the military helped me out a lot because I found something that I was good at, something that I enjoyed. You know, when you're in the military and you're doing stuff that you're supposed to be doing in the military, like, man, this fucking sucks. This blows. I don't want to do this again. Can't wait to get out. But when you get out, man, it's a completely different story. You know, and I'm not saying it's for everybody, and you know, people do get out that really enjoy it and really, you know, are maybe grateful for their time in the military, but man, they're even more grateful to be back out and be a civilian. You know, for me, that wasn't it. I found my click, right? I really enjoyed driving the heavy equipment transporters. I really enjoyed teaching drivers training. I really enjoyed all these things that I was doing. I enjoyed being there for my soldiers. I enjoyed helping them out. You know, and a lot of NCOs won't say this, but I really enjoyed having a soldier come to me and, you know, maybe being down on the army or down on their luck or down on something. And, you know, I really enjoy building people back up. And I still really enjoy that. So, you know, I think because the military and my wife and my family were such a positive thing to me that it's really hard to just nail down what effect that this had on my service because I was in a different place, right? I'd found the military, felt like a career. I had my wife, I had my kids. It just felt like I was succeeding, right? So I was at my peak, man. I was peak happiness. I was enjoying it. Anybody that served with me might disagree and say, "Hey, man, we know what you said. You fucking hated it." But you know, like I said, when you're in, it's like, man, I hate doing this shit. Mandatory fun, mandatory camping. You know, on your field exercises, and you're out there in the tent. And it's 12 degrees outside, and you're just laying there trying to get warm in your sweaty clothes from the day because you're in the desert and it was 90 during the day. But, you know, when I think back to when I became a non-commissioned officer, I think, you know, the soldiers that I had at the time were really impressed, and they told me this. They were really impressed with my transition from being a specialist to being a soldier to being an NCO, right? They said that it was a seamless transition, right? And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that, again, I was happy, right? I was really enjoying what I was doing. And I think when I got promoted to Sergeant E5, I think that it gave me a new outlook on my service because I now had the power to influence and help soldiers. And, you know, I loved the challenging things. And it was a challenge to be an NCO. It was a challenge to be a good NCO. Man, it's hard. It's hard when you're responsible for other people and, you know, these people may not make the right choices all the time. And it's really, really hard to find the balance and not take it out on every single soldier that you have when you have one that's a tough challenge. But, you know, like I said, early on in my career, definitely had some weight issues, had some trouble passing PT tests because I was just overweight, couldn't do that run. You know, I would fail tape because, again, I was overweight. And, you know, then I couldn't put my finger on it. But now looking back, I'm like, man, you know, that really, I never had an eating disorder, but, definitely some things that happened in my childhood, I think affected my, my thought process with food. And you know, I've not really explored that in therapy yet. So I really honestly don't have an answer to that. This is just an assumption. But you know, when I hurt my back, I did all the treatments, the physical therapy. So did physical therapy, got an MRI. They referred me to the pain clinic. Got to the pain clinic. They started doing chiropractor. They started doing acupuncture. We did steroid injections in my back, and we did nerve ablation. So when they did the steroid injections, I've had a total of 9 steroid injections, and only one of those has been outside of the military. So I've had that many steroid injections. When they would do them, I wouldn't get any relief. So that's when they decided to do the nerve ablation. So when they did the nerve ablation, I still didn't get any relief. So I went back to the chiropractor. Sorry, not the chiropractor, acupuncture. So I went back to acupuncture, and what they had been doing was battlefield acupuncture. So they were putting the needles in my ears, and it was actually giving relief to my back. And I was able to lay there for an hour and just, man, just relax. Finally, it felt great. But after they did the nerve ablation, I came back and, you know, I went to my first acupuncture appointment after the nerve ablation. And they, you know, he took the little, I don't know what they're called, but it looks like a pair of pliers, essentially. He took these pliers and he'd move it around my ear trying to find the spot of where he was going to put the needle, and I couldn't feel it. And he said, well, I have bad news for you. The nerve ablation worked, but since you don't have any relief, it means it's not going to give you any. So he said, there's nothing I can do for you further with acupuncture, so I'm going to refer you back to the pain clinic. So around the same time, my chiropractor treatment was ending, had no relief from that. So I sat down with the pain management doctor and had the hardest conversation to date that I've had in my life. And it was 2 sentences, and he said, there's nothing more that we can do for you. And I said, okay, what's next? And that's when he said, the med board process. He said that they would look at medically separating me, and that was my only option. And I sat there and cried in front of this man. And I thought through my head, the only thing that was racing through my mind was, what the fuck am I going to do? I have a family of 5 that I have to take care of. I have to feed. I have to make sure that they are taken care of. So that was kind of my trigger, right? So that was my trigger for my PTSD, my bipolar. So as the med board process is moving on, I am struggling I am super struggling with anxiety. I mean, I am just, my heart's constantly racing. I'm, just getting angry, losing my shit with my kids and my wife. And, hey, I was just stressed out, right? That's what I thought. I'm just stressed out. So go to the doc, tell him. He's basically like, well, I don't want to treat you for anxiety this close to your med board. He said, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you these pills that I can't remember the name of, but he said, basically it's Benadryl on steroids, right? So it's just a really strong allergy medicine that's going to kind of calm you down. He said, try it at home on the weekend. Don't drive. See how you feel. And then, we'll probably have you take them at night if they make you too groggy. So do that. Start applying for jobs. Get a job at a, I interviewed for assistant store manager at a grocery store, which is something that I did before the military. Worked in retail as in management, retail management. And I thought, man, I gotta do something, and this is what I know. So this is what I went to. After I got out of the military, that first year was probably the roughest year on my family ever. First time I went to a VA appointment, the nurse asked me, the simple suicide stuff. Hey, you think about hurting yourself? Do you have a plan to kill yourself? And I said, no, I don't have a plan to kill myself. I'm not thinking about hurting myself. But what I would really like is if I went to sleep and did not wake up. So that was really, to me, the first sign that there was something wrong. So I said that to this woman who works at the VA, who works in healthcare, and is supposed to be there to take care of people. And then the doctor came in to see me. Nothing, right? Didn't say anything about it. Went on about the appointment, and that was it. And I left. So when I don't really remember a lot from this first year. A lot of it was kind of blurry, looking back. But I do remember maybe a couple of days after, maybe the same day, I'm not sure, but I remember telling my wife what happened, and I remember just absolutely breaking down. And that's when the intrusive thoughts started happening. Started thinking about, just taking my vehicle off of a road and flipping it over in the river and just not taking my seatbelt off and just letting it be that way that it ends. I had all kinds of fucked up thoughts and had started seeing memories. And like I said earlier, in like a cartoon phase, and like it was repressed memories. And I was like, at first I'm like, oh, man, that didn't happen. And I'm watching because I can't pull myself away from it. I'm watching. I'm like, oh, fuck, that did happen. I remember that. Like, this is a memory. And then the cartoon effect goes away and it becomes real. And I'm just standing there staring at myself as a child. It was pretty tough. But like I said, I don't know if it really affected my military career, if it affected it in any way. Maybe for the better, maybe not at the beginning, but maybe as I became an NCO, maybe it allowed me to be more mindful of my soldiers. Maybe. I don't know. Pretty mindful person now, even now after I've had help. So I don't know, maybe that's just me. Maybe it had nothing to do with my mental health state. Maybe it was just me. But yeah, I can't, really, I can't really physically pinpoint or mentally pinpoint something that was directly affected by my mental health because I hadn't hit my trigger yet. So I talk about trigger and I talk about suffering from mental health, and I've done these first two episodes, and you know, talking about I'm nobody and this is my story, and this is my mental health journey, you know, but looking back, you know, like in episode two when I talked about my early adulthood, I know that shit was wrong, but I just thought that was me, right? I didn't necessarily think anything was wrong with me mentally. I just thought that was me. So I didn't at the time really attribute that to mental health. But like I said, when I was in the military and I had my family and we were all happy and everything was going great, you know, I was just different. I was different. But yeah, you know, it affected not my career after the military. It really affected it because, you know, I was up one minute, down the next. Man, I love this job. Man, I hate this job. You know, man, I love the people I work with. Man, I hate the people I work with. You know, I was just up and down inside my head this whole entire time, just trying to put everything together and just trying to figure myself out. You know, but hey, I've bounced back. I've got a great career now. I really love my job. I really love doing this podcast. I'm really excited about everything going on. You know, I did some volunteer work at a children's advocacy center. And, you know, it was awesome. It was awesome. I got to be a part of something that helps children like me, right? So, again, I'll say it. I'll use it. I wish I knew who to credit for sure. But I've grown into someone who would have protected me as a child. And I think that's just phenomenal. And that's just amazing. You know, so really getting out, it did affect me. But I think just me and who I am, I really, you know, kind of tried to not let it affect me in front of other people, right? I've had this shield up for so long, right? That I just try to not let it affect me in front of other people. I try to protect myself. I don't do that anymore. I just let it all out, and man, I feel so much better. I feel so much better talking to you guys, everybody listening, talking to my family, talking to my wife, therapist. It just feels so much better. It feels amazing. It's crazy. I know it doesn't work for everybody. And, you know, if it does work for you, that's awesome. If it doesn't, man, I'm really sorry. And I hope you find something that does work for you soon. But yeah, that's kind of that in a nutshell. So let's get into what this episode is about. Not gonna, you know, drill down a lot on this. But I do want to talk about it. I feel like it's something that's really important. I've learned a lot about this through therapy. So this is called, what I'm talking about is neuroplasticity, right? So it's the brain's ability to change its structure and function in response to new experiences, injuries, or environmental changes. So in therapy, I'm learning, right? So when it talks about injury, so a lot of, you know, people talk about, you hear people all the time talking about chemical imbalances in the brain, right? So think about that as an injury, and think about that from the perspective that, you know, your brain has been injured. So it doesn't operate the way, not necessarily that it should, because everybody's brain operates differently, but it doesn't operate the way that your brain was intended to operate, because you've had this trauma that has physically injured your brain, right? Because your brain develops as a child. And if you have trauma as a child, then your brain changes the way it develops. Okay. So neuroplasticity is basically taking that injury and restructuring your brain through, you know, like, I don't really know the word, like positive behavior, I guess I would say positive feedback to yourself. So it's basically like, you know, there's this one thing I do, and I didn't invent this. I didn't create this. I don't know who did. I don't know where I've heard of that. But honestly, I think a movie or a TV show or something, or maybe even in therapy. I don't know. But that's not important. I just got off on a tangent. So what I've heard is this saying. So if trying to think, sorry, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this and explain it. So the best way I can think of is if all right, you're standing up, you have a cup, right? And you just finished your drink, your water, whatever it was that you had in your cup. So when you go to set it down on the counter, but what you really need to do is either put it away in the sink or put it away in the dishwasher. You go to set it down on the counter. Before you set it down, you say, don't set it down, put it away, right? I don't know where I heard that, but I used that today, okay? I used it tonight before I recorded this episode. I was walking past the kitchen island. I was about to set something down. I was like, nope, don't put it down, put it away. And you know what I did? I took it, I put it where it goes, and it's perfect. It helps declutter, right? But what I'm doing with that is I'm working with neuroplasticity, and I'm retraining my brain to function differently. And it's possible with mental health to do that. And that's what I've learned a lot about in therapy is, you know, this neuroplasticity, I can change the way I think about things. I can take a thought that I have, and if it's a negative thought or a bad thought, I can twist it around, and I can turn it around in my brain, and I can restructure that thought process. That's the idea behind neuroplasticity, right? So how neuroplasticity works, and this is a simple Google search. So if you just type in neuroplasticity definition, this is what comes up on Google, okay? So how neuroplasticity works: reorganization. Neurons reorganize their connections to adapt to new situations. Growth. New neuron pathways form connections. Rewiring. The brain rewires itself to function differently. Cortical remapping. The brain makes systematic adjustments to its structure. Guys, I'm telling you right now, this thing has been a game changer for me. I can't tell anybody how to do it. I'm not qualified to tell anybody how to do it. Fuck, I just Googled this, right? But what I can tell you is my experience with it has been phenomenal, and it's working, and it's amazing. And, you know, I my wife tells me all the time how much better I'm doing. She recognizes it. She validates me, right? She tells me, hey, you're doing so much better. Like, hey, you see what you just did? You never would have did it that way. You would have done it this way. But you're doing amazing. You're doing awesome. And, you know, a lot of it is neuroplasticity and learning how to do that. So if you guys want to get those tools in your toolbox, go see a therapist. Go talk to someone, right? When you talk to your therapist, tell them you want to learn about neuroplasticity. Try it, man. Try everything you can and keep what helps, right? Keep those things that help. I've tried so many different coping skills. My favorite one is grounding. That's my favorite one. I mean, it just is, right? And this neuroplasticity thing is not really a coping skill. It's a tool to literally rebuild your brain and I should really edit these episodes. It's a way to reprogram your brain and to change your thought process on everything. And it's great. And I can tell you right now, it works. It may not work for everybody. I don't know. I don't know what the success rate is, but it worked for me. So it's definitely worth trying. It can't hurt. So when neuroplasticity occurs, okay, this is really important. So when neuroplasticity occurs during development in the womb, after injuries like strokes or traumatic brain injuries, when learning new skills, when adapting to sensory or cognitive deficits, when experiencing environmental changes. Your environment changes, it changes your neuroplasticity, right? If you have vision problems and you can see better out of one eye than the other, your brain, the neuroplasticity is going to adjust the way your brain is structured to help you to be able to see when you have both eyes open, right? It is going to restructure itself to try and help supplement that. And it's insane, man. The power of the human brain is amazing. So, benefits of neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity can help restore function after an injury. It can help people adapt to new experiences and learn new skills. That one's very important. That is where it plays a part in mental health. It helps you learn new skills. It helps you learn new thought processes. It helps you change the way you think about things, change your outlook, however you want to word it. It helps you do that. Phenomenal tool, guys. I really, really suggest that you, if you need to seek mental help, that you seek it and then you try these things. Tell your therapist you want to know all the coping skills. You want to know all the tools like neuroplasticity. You want to know everything. I don't have everything, especially in this episode. As I continue to do these episodes, we'll have more things to talk about. But tell your therapist, I want to know everything. I want to put everything into practice so I know what works for me. That's how you help yourself through mental health, guys. It's nobody else's responsibility to fix your mental health, but other people can help. Therapists can help. The tools they give you can help. It's nobody else's responsibility to help you through this, but they can help you with the tools. You have to use the tools, guys. You have to use the tools. If you use them properly, they do work. They do. You just have to find the one that works for you. Guys, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Ginger Veteran Podcast. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. I really, really greatly appreciate it. See me back next week with episode 5, where we talk to the CEO, Nathan Welch, of Misfits Motorsports. Thank you.